going on, everybody? Welcome back to Get in the Trunk, Season 6, Episode 11. Hanging out with my friends. I have a question for you guys. When you go to the doctor, could be just like for like a physical, or if you're seeing a specialist where they're, you know, like an orthopedist or something, or it could even literally be a haircut, a situation where you're sitting there and someone is like working on you, right? Like you're getting some work done. If they don't start a conversation, do you start a conversation? Do you ever talk to them? Do you, hey, how you doing? How's your summer been? Do you ever do that kind of stuff? Francis has given me a big no.
No.
You'll sit there in complete silence through an entire haircut if the barber seems uninterested in talking.
Absolutely. 100%. Yes. Yes. I see it as like an Uber drive. Like if the guy doesn't want to, he's driving all day.
Uber drive is another good example.
Yeah. I'm just like, we can sit in silence. I'm happy. I enjoy the silence. I'm Depeche Mode. I enjoy the silence.
Physician's assistant comes up, puts a... to test your blood pressure, sitting there in silence, you don't say, how was your weekend?
I mean, if he or she is not initiating, I'll just be like, no, let them do their job. I don't want to mess with their flow.
Skid is also a no. You're giving me a visual no.
No, I do. The woman who cuts my hair, me and my sister go to the same person. I'll talk to her because like I know her.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's a different story.
But if it's someone I'm seeing for the first time, whatever, it's just like, no, absolutely not. And that's a funny thing too with like Lyft Uber drivers. Is in New York, get a Lyft in New York, they will not talk to you. Anywhere else we go, they'll start talking to you.
Yeah. It's very strange. Most of the cities we go to, people are like, so where are you coming in from? How's the flight? Sydney, you seem torn.
Yeah. I think I have this thing about me. No matter what, if I try to be mysterious or I try to be invisible, it is impossible for me. And I feel as though people gravitate to me like a magnet and want to talk to me. And it can be a great thing, and I love it. I'm charismatic, and I know that about myself. I like talking to people. But I'm with Francis, and I'm with Skid. If people don't initiate at this ripe old age of 30 years old, I no longer initiate. I don't have to. I don't have to do that. But as soon as they give like an inch, they like crack the door open and I give a response, full blown conversation for the 30-minute Uber ride.
Yeah.
And I want to die. I mean, it's nice. It's nice, but because
it's
I want to die. It's just like they like feel comfortable. Yeah. They feel really comfortable with me. And whatever pheromones I give off, people are just like, I could talk to you forever. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm glad you feel that way. I'm glad I make you comfortable. But I did want to sit in silence for this Uber ride. I keep like trying to put a headphone in. You know, I'm like,
just missed my shot. Do you ever, some people I feel like ooze this off of them. Like you said, pheromones, Sydney. Like some people seem like talkers. I don't know if you guys have ever experienced this, but have you ever been in an elevator and somebody walks in the elevator and you can just feel that they're going to talk to you? Yeah, right. Like, the door closes and you're just like, oh my God, this guy's going to say something. I can feel it. And he's just like, nice boots, man. You know what I mean? Like, so he just like, I knew he was going to talk. Like, I don't know what
you're,
it is.
You're a talker.
No. Yes, no? I like talking like you do, but I get in Ubers and I immediately put headphones in. I'm like, please, I don't want to talk. Now, it's different if I've had a couple of pops with my buddy Troy LaValle over here and we get into a Lyft at midnight on the road going back to the hotel. That's always different. That's always like, hey, man, how you doing? And if they start like talking at all, I'll just go on and on and on and on and on, and that ride will fly by. Troy, I assume you just plot the murder of everyone that's around you at all times, silently.
I tell doctors, if you want to see my penis, I want to see yours.
It's only fair.
So then they stop talking to you. Yep. That's how you get them
then
to stop talking.
Then we just sit in silence for a 45-minute photo.
Like a heavy, heavy, awkward silence.
While he debates my offer.
Do you guys want to know something weird, Troy? I feel like maybe you would feel so opposite to this, which I think is funny. I love going to the doctor. Do you like going to the doctor?
I don't mind it. I kind of enjoy it. I like getting my blood taken. I like seeing how I'm doing.
Okay,
I had a physical recently, and I like to feel like I'm taking a test when I ace it.
I thought you would hate, I don't know why, I thought you would like despise going to the doctor.
No, I feel like it's, I love upkeep.
But you didn't go to the doctor for like 15 years. This was just financially motivated.
Yeah, I didn't have health insurance for about 15 years.
That wasn't so because you hate going to the doctor.
Yeah, no, yeah, when I got married, I got on my wife's insurance. And so that was the only reason. I was like, I went out, I was like, I'm getting everything done. Look at this.
I'm going on a medical spree.
I'm going to get surgery.
Put a finger in there. But yeah, no,
I check the oil.
As I get older, I do find that I'm starting conversations with everybody, and usually I'll let them lead, but if they're quiet, I start sparking. Like I get my hair cut at a stupidly expensive salon in Manhattan, and I always feel like she knows how much this costs, and so she's like letting me kind of determine what we're gonna do here. And I'll usually, if she's not a chatty Cathy, I'll just start talking, because it's an hour. It's an hour. I can't sit in silence for an hour because I feel guilty.
She works your dome for an hour?
I can't believe you sit
that
down
takes
for
an hour?
Oh, yeah. It's very, you get what you
very
pay
meticulous.
For. There's some shampoo. There's a pre-shampoo. There's a post-shampoo. There's some condition.
Oh, man.
There might even be a little bit of a head massage in there. Wow. And there's also like a full bar with whiskey. She has like beer. And I'm usually
do
like,
you usually there. Partake?
Yeah, if it's past 10:30 in the morning.
It's you right almost across, said 11 and realized you were lying.
It's right down. It's like, the other half brewery right near Rockefeller Center is right across the street. So she stocks up her fridge with like sweet other half.
Oh my God.
Sometimes I'll be in there at like 3-4 o'clock and I'll look over and she's got all these nice bourbons.
She's got a little broccoli.
We get a little burb, a little other half chaser. I only have to drive an hour and a half home, but no, I find like that I have to, cause I only get a few haircuts a year. So we got to catch up and stuff. But with the doctor, I'll try to jib and jab a little bit, I like to make people laugh. That's the thing. It's like, I try to find a way to say something to make them laugh. That's my high.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. I could see that. That's good. That's good. Well, you're about to talk to somebody a little different here, and I'm curious how this is all going to go as we return to the Hotel Broad Albany, the basements to be exact. You guys, one episode ago, maybe? I don't even remember at this point. I think it was only, two episodes ago, walked in to the Hotel Broad Albany and began exploring and getting a sense of this strange, strange place, potentially following on the trail of Murray/Sam and finding that he is missing, blood all over his room, where is my bottle written on the wall. And you get the sense from an old map you found in Abigail Wright's apartment back in 1995, hand-drawn map on Hotel Broad Albany stationery, that if you find an elevator to go to the basements, you will be able to find a path to what you now know is called the Whisper Labyrinth. And within, you should be able to find soul bottles. And particularly, what this note that you received apparently from Abby said is find J.C. Lintz's bottle. A bottle that is supposedly in the Whisper Labyrinth that has appeared to Neil in several dreams. And on your way through these basements, you ran into the one and only architect of the McAllister building, whose name I just forgot.
Asa Darabondi.
Asa Darabondi. With a body in the tub, or the illusion of a body in the tub. Neil tries to help this small child in the tub and is apparently pulled into the tub, nearly drowns to death, if not for Vicky in a huge pharmacy role, finding the right medicine to inject into Neil at the right moment, saved his life barely, and got him back up. And as he was stabilized but unconscious, you guys were able to talk to Asa Darabondi and discovered a lot of information about his aunt that had was an actress overseas and had come home and told him all of these ideas of Carcosa and the King in Yellow, that he had begun to feel strangely at a young age, 12, 13, and had this penchant for art and art and artistic stuff, and he found a benefactor through his aunt that ended up getting him into this college to design buildings and architecture. So then he starts designing buildings in Chicago. Then he's hired to go design buildings in New York City, one of which was the Lundeen House, which eventually became the McAllister Building, the building you went into in 1995 that seemed to be in some way a portal to the night floors, which you called them then. Now it almost seems like it was a portal into the Hotel Broad Alban. However, you never saw a lobby. You didn't see some of the people that are in here. It's a very strange world to kind of wrap your head around. But you know that it is fully and completely unnatural, top to bottom. And as much as you would love to report this to Delta Green, you feel strongly, at least you've indicated to me that you feel strongly, you can't even trust Delta Green, that Delta Green is not someone that can get you out of this trouble, that you are so far in deep that even they might want to take you out. And so you race to this hotel. You get the feeling as you walk in that you are on the right path. Your sanity begins to regain. You start to focus a little bit more. And Asa tells you, if you can kill his aunt and stop her from haunting his dreams, he can help you get to the Whisper Labyrinth. You say, no thanks, Chief Rocca. And you peace out of that room and start trying to find your own way using the map. The place on the map that should be the entrance to the Whisper Labyrinth is just a wall that seems like a brick wall, and you cannot get through it. Roger tries using all the strength he has. Nothing happens there. And so you continue exploring, and that is when you arrive at what looks like an arboretum, a large underground space that is filled with shrubbery and wild plants and flowers. You looked up and there was a domed frosted glass ceiling. But there was no sunlight. It looked like it was underground, like it had been buried or something like that. And all of a sudden in the corner, you saw the lights and heard some like a hammering or something. And as you came around and peeked around the bush, a failed stealth check, I believe, alerted a person that is hacking away at a wall with a sledgehammer, wearing a hard hat miner's helmet with a lamp on the front of it. There's a lantern by their side as they're working this, and the hearing you, they turn and the light goes into your face and you just see a silhouette of a humanoid figure standing before you. Before we launch into this episode, I'd like you to take a moment to level up anything that you have checked off. Because you're gonna need it.
Oh my God. What do you have to do again?
You have to roll a 1d3 for anything that you had previously failed in the last couple episodes. You should have checked it. And your skill will go up 1d3.
Yes. All right. There we go.
And did anybody get anything juicy out of... Any threes?
I got something pretty good.
What'd you three?
Three for search. Now my search is up to 60.
There we go. I feel like that started at like 40 or something.
I think it started at 50, but that's crazy. 10 point come up is pretty darn good.
Yeah, it is pretty darn good.
And then my drive increased and my stealth increased, but only by like 1 and 2.
Oh, I remember you failing that drive. That was funny. Anybody else?
I got a 3 in something, but I forgot what it was.
I got a 3 in first aid. After missing that save, I was trying to help out Neil and that, and then I got a 2 in search.
Nice.
Feeling that first aid is going to come in handy.
I think so too. I'm going to like just keep rolling first aid for nothing.
I got to just keep the rules for first aid open at all times.
I think I got a 3 in stealth, which brings it up to a 77.
Oh, yeah, you failed that stealth check.
Oh, what?
Yeah. And
you failed a stealth. That's right.
I got 2 like in search, which brought it up to 31, and then a 1 in firearms, which brings it up to 81.
Oh, my God. Jesus.
Oh. You're like Iron Man. I've got all weapons.
That is really fun to, it's one of the fun parts about the system. Is like, if you have an 80 firearm, sure, in a pivotal moment when everybody's going to die, you don't want to fail it. But like, if you do fail it with 80, you're like, I'll get better at it. It's very rare to fail those high numbers, but when you do, you'll get something out of it.
Yeah, I did fail it. That's why I was able to go from 80 to 81. I was hoping a little bit more.
Okay, so let's get back into it. This figure turns toward you. Boom! This light shines brightly in your face. And who are you? Who the hell is that? Just silhouetted figure.
Like whole male
Roger's
voice.
At the front, right?
Roger's in front?
I thought so.
Roger, are you... Point of order. Are you wielding two shotguns?
I have one. The other one is strapped to my back like a vigilante.
Okay.
Yeah, the folks with weapons are in front. I remember that. I mean,
Vicky is definitely up front. She has a gun, but I think she would be behind Roger just for, like, I don't know. Roger should be in front, I think. You tell me, Troy.
Yeah, Roger's probably in front.
Okay. And he'll, immediately the light blasts on you and he can see that you have a shotgun in your hand. And he's just like, whoa, 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 whoa! And he puts up two hands and his sledgehammer just sort of like falls over and tonk! The handle hits the ground. Dang, 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 dang.
Shut your light
off.
It kind
of echoes around the room. And he's just like, whoa, 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 sorry, sorry, I didn't, oh, wait a minute. I know you. And he like starts slowly walking toward you. Again, you can't see any of these features.
Stop right there. Take your helmet off. Oh, yeah,
yeah, yeah, no, no. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Take your helmet off. We can't see you.
We met. Oh, sorry, sorry. I'll turn this thing off. And you see he's got a lantern down next to him, but it's actually like burning oil, like an old style oil lantern on the ground next to him. And there's a small flame coming from that. As soon as he kills the light, takes your eyes a second to adjust, but he turns off this helmet lamp and you begin to recognize the features of a man, Vicky, Bobby, Neil, that you shared a cocktail with in the smoking lounge 20 years ago. Mark Rourke. He's wearing the same suit he was wearing then, except now he's got like equipment strapped over it. Literally like rope and like a carabiner and like carabiners and stuff. And his suit is all like dusty and dirty. And he says, I know you. We met. We met before. You. Oh, you're the shotgun guy. Where's your other shotgun?
On my back.
All right. I'm sorry. I was just making light of the situation. What are you doing down here? I thought you guys went to the party.
No, we didn't go to the party.
Well, where you been the past few days?
Shut up.
Past few days?
Days?
Where are you? Where is this place?
We're in the hotel. This is the Arboretum.
What are you doing here? Why are you smashing through the wall?
Well, that's kind of a long story, but... The short version is I got tired of just trying to hit everybody up for life insurance and decided it was time for me to get my bottle. And so I talked to Emmeline and she said that the secret entrance is in the Arboretum. And I think it's right over here. Look, you want to come look? I think I found it. And you can see behind him, part of the wall is kind of like hacked away, but it's a real shit job. He's like barely gotten through the outer coating of the wall as he's hitting it with a sledgehammer. But as you look over, you see, Neil, what you were looking for. You see a series of like mining tools. There's literally like a pickaxe and a shovel, a spade, and Roger, you immediately have a flashback. Not only did you see this guy, you had two shotguns pointed at him in the hallway, and you had the same situation where you were carrying the bag of money. You told him to get lost, you know, and he was trying to like talk you down, and then he just ran off. You, in this moment, looking at him and looking down at the floor, you also recognize, it's like you have this flashback to being in the night floors, standing in the hotel room of the old woman right before you shot her in the face. And in that bedroom, in the back, there was a spade and a sledgehammer that was leaned up against the wall. And like the wall was hacked into a little bit, and this is where you first saw your bottle. Like, you looked through the wall, and crumbling on the other side, you saw a bottle with your name on it. As you went to try to move through, the ceiling collapsed, and it all came down in front of you. Moments later, you put a pillow on an old woman's face. The old woman who you saw in the hallway in the future, in the first Delta Green operation, you shot her in the face.
Oh, my God.
So he says, I was just trying to get my bottle, and Emmeline says it's in the Arboretum, right through here.
Wait. Rourke.
Oh, hey. You look different. Did you get a haircut? Did you change your hair?
No, yes, I did. Rourke?
It looks good.
Who is Emmeline?
Emmeline Fitzroy. She stays at the hotel.
Fitzroy.
Fitzroy?
That's one of the names.
That's one of the names. You know the name Emmeline Fitzroy. Emmeline Fitzroy is the author of A World Without Doors.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Fuck. God, this is so...
This is blowing my mind.
It like breaks my brain, and I can't imagine what Vicky feels.
Yeah.
And then she blinks, like trying to think the name. Like, how does she know that name? The book? Wait, Rourke... You just said you saw us 2 days ago?
It might have been. Three. I'm not sure. Just a couple days ago. I didn't see you around, so I thought you went to the party or checked out of the hotel. But now I'm understanding that that didn't happen.
We need to get to the bottles. We need to get there for a different reason. We're not going for our bottles. We're not going to the party. We have to get somebody's bottle.
You want to come with me? Because I'm going in, baby.
So Vicky looks at Roger and Bobby and Neil.
I mean, this is where the map is telling us to go, right?
No, the map is telling you it's somewhere else.
The map is telling us it's through the... We just hit a dead end. We just hit where it should continue.
Oh, okay. I thought he was at the same
we found.
Right, the map told you to go to this place, but there was a wall there. There was nothing there. Neil said... Are there any like tools around that we could use?
Right.
You walked for a little bit, and then suddenly here's a man with a bunch of mining tools hacking through a wall in another room.
What if we look at the map? Yeah. Where does it look like he's breaking into?
It's not on the map. The map only draws from the elevator to Lince's bottle. It's not.
It's sort of a simple
giving
map.
You details on all the extraneous passages that could exist.
Okay. But we know that part of the wall that we need to get through, right? Can we get his tools? Can we just like...
You want to go in character there?
Oh, sorry. we think we have a... We need to get at a bottle as well, but we need your tools. Can we use your tools? Can we use your sledgehammer?
Oh, sure, I'd love a hand. Yeah, we can get right through.
No, but not
grab
here.
Grab the pickaxe. And he starts to reach down and grab the sledgehammer.
We need it in another spot. There's another part. We have a map that's taking us to a bottle.
What?
That we need to get to. And there's... We think there's an entrance. Another
Emmeline
secret
says
entrance.
It's in the Arboretum.
Well...
I mean, right here.
And wait, Joe, just remind us the players. The Arboretum, we've heard of that.
No, you just got here. Last episode, like you walked into this place and you saw plants and bushes and flowers and stuff in this underground space, very odd. And you heard this guy beginning to kind of hack at the wall in the distance. So
okay,
you hadn't
so
heard
no
of the
one's ever mentioned the Arboretum.
No, this is the first
now.
Time you're hearing of this entrance to the Whisper Labyrinth. You think it's another entrance to the Whisper Labyrinth. That's what we have to resolve right here. So he's like, why don't you pick up a pick? You're a big fella. Why don't you pick up the pickaxe? Help me out here, and we'll find out if this is the archway through. I hear it's an archway.
Can I ask you a question?
You can find the arch. Yeah.
Why do you want your bottle?
Well, that's a really good question, and I appreciate you asking. I had thought about going to the party. Now, let's leave out for a second that I never got an invitation. But after talking to you guys, and you seemed pretty intent to go, and I thought I didn't want to go because, you know, once you go to the party, that's it. And I really liked my time at the hotel. I got to thinking, and I thought, you know, it's the same thing for me every day. In and out. Maybe some of the guests change, but for the most part, I'm doing the same thing over and over, and I needed a change. I needed something different. And yesterday, Lint said he was going to get his. And I laughed at him. Nobody knows the way to get there. Nobody can find their bottle. Well, he didn't come back. So I started looking all around down here in the basement. There's no sign of him. I think he might have made it. Now, how he got through here and didn't break any walls or anything, I don't know. But Emmeline told me last night that if I hack through the wall in the Arboretum, I can get there. So I'm giving it a shot. I want my bottle because I need a change. I'm flat here. I got nothing going on. And they tell you, it holds the greatest secret of your life. I think it's time to know mine. What about you? Why do you want your bottle?
We don't.
You don't want your bottle?
No.
Then what are you going in there for? Why don't you just go enjoy the hotel? They got great music. Piano player in the evening. You could have a cocktail.
We're looking for J.C. Lintz. We're looking for his bottle.
You're looking for... Lintz already got his bottle. Well, I don't really know. I'm assuming, I guess. I ain't got no evidence to that fact, but he went to go get it. He disappeared.
So you don't come back if you get your bottle?
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. Maybe you do. But maybe it puts you right again. You know?
Wait. Rourke, Emmeline Fitzroy never got her bottle, correct?
Yeah, correct. She's upstairs.
So how does she know where it is?
And he looks off in the distance, like you just broke him. And he's like, well, she's real smart.
She would get it. Everybody wants it, right?
Well, not everybody wants it. It's very dangerous knowing the deepest secrets of yourself. Some people aren't ready for it. She's real smart. Maybe she thinks she's not ready. I don't know.
Rourke.
Yeah.
And Vicky just like electric shock in her brain. And she's like, have you seen Abigail?
Gail? No,
Abigail,
I haven't.
Wright.
I haven't seen her since she went off with the salesman, with the encyclopedia salesman.
Who's the encyclopedia?
He told you this in 95. He said that they had a going away party for her because she was going upstairs to the party with the encyclopedia salesman. He said he didn't like that guy.
And we still don't know.
Something weird
is
about that fella.
We still don't know who it was, yeah.
And no details, yeah. The only thing that might cross over is Vicky, in your dreams that you had of being at the wedding.
Yeah.
You saw a man with a briefcase talking to Christopher in the dream, but you never saw his face, and you tried to chase him, remember? You couldn't chase him.
Rourke, I hate to be the one to break this to you. I think Emmeline is fucking with you.
She's a sweetheart. What are you talking about? No, we're friends.
Your bottle's not behind that wall. She's trying to make a fool out of you. And if I were you, I'd take that sledgehammer, I'd go upstairs and put it through her fucking skull.
Well, maybe you give me a hand here. Let's just prove her wrong, and if you're right, I'll go up there, I'll give her a piece of my mind. I mean, I'm not going to smash her head in with a sledgehammer, but I'll give her a piece of my mind. Or we try your way, wherever you say it is. I don't know why she'd lie to me, but maybe you're right, pointing to Vicky. Maybe she doesn't really know. Maybe you know better than her.
Well, we have a map. We could try our way, and if it doesn't work, then maybe we... Roger will help you, Rourke. And Vicky looks at Roger, just trying to be like, I don't know.
You see a look in Roger's demeanor, because obviously he has his glasses on, where you feel like Roger could snap any minute and kill this guy.
Oh, God.
Or maybe we go our separate ways, and we just borrow your tools, and we'll bring them back if it doesn't...
No. I need my tools. You can use my tools, but I'm coming. You can use my tools, but I'm coming.
And Vicky also sighs, thinking like she will also punch this man.
I just want my bottle. I don't know why that bothers you so much. Look, I got the tools. Let's make a deal here. I got the tools.
Can we see
you if... know the place to go. Let's team up. Yeah, you, Bobby.
Sorry.
Wait, do I even know your name? I don't know if I know your name. Yeah, this is a magical
How do you
land.
Know his name?
How's your dad? How's the current
dad in World War II?
Say hi to your mother for me.
Can we see how far he's gotten? Has he gotten far through the wall?
Nope, not at all.
Not at
all.
Okay.
He's hitting it with a sledgehammer, and he has started to just put a couple cracks in the outer wall.
Yeah.
He hasn't done anything quite yet.
So let's... He goes aside to Roger. Roger, we need his tools. We should just bring him with us and try to get through that wall.
How do you know we need those tools? We might just be barking up the wrong tree like he is, smashing at a wall that can't be broken. There's no... way through. This is not the way.
What do you think? Should we go talk to Emmeline and find out what she knows?
Fuck Emmeline. Vicky walks up. She doesn't know anything. We have three options. We borrow the tools, take Rourke with us, smash through our wall that we have on our map. Two, we go back to Darabondi and help him kill his fucking aunt, are you out of your minds? We have the tools right here, Roger. Can you just fucking hold on to that last string in your brain, holding the right and the left sides together in the middle for another 20 minutes?
You listen to me, old lady.
You fucking start with me, Roger.
Oh, God.
My fists are sledgehammers, and if I could punch through that wall, no tool can.
Wow.
Vicky.
I've seen some arrogance from Roger before. But saying that you'd be better off with your fists getting through a brick wall than a pickaxe.
Vicky's taking a turn in her approach, and she softens. She goes close to Roger, kind of away from Bobby, and she says, "Look, no matter what happens, you will be fine, and I know that. But look at Bobby and look at Neil." And Neil's like wet. Neil just was drowning.
Just drowned.
And she's like, "They need you,
Neil has
Roger.
Like four hit points, right?"
Yeah.
Neil has four hit points.
I'm wearing like a Target sport shirt and like pair of shorts. Yeah. It's like, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I've got no weapons.
Roger, they can't punch their way out of every problem. I can't shoot my way out of every problem. It is fucked up. And we need you. So, please.
I'm your sledgehammer.
He wants to be.
She taps him on the chest. Thank you. Okay. Rourke, get the tools. We'll try our way.
Excellent. Sounds good. And he... boop, puts the lamp light back on because it is totally dark in here. Without, you know, you have the lantern light, but like otherwise it's dark. He picks up his sledgehammer, picks up a lantern. You see rope on the ground. You see some, it's basically like spelunking equipment you see on the ground, along with a pickaxe, a shovel, a couple other things. Are you guys picking up this other stuff and just walking with him?
Bobby grabs the pickaxe. Just in case it's some fucking close
Vicky
encounters.
Vicky grabs the rope and like an extra lantern or headlamp, if you know, whatever.
He can give you his lantern. There's only one lantern, but he has a headlamp, so he'll give you a lantern if you want. And that gives him a free hand. Maybe he takes some rope, puts it over his shoulder, and he's got a sledgehammer in the other hand. And it's like, all right, where to? Where's X marks the spot?
We pull out the map and
We could go to our evidence board again here, and you can see the map hand drawn by someone.
Where did we find the map?
Perhaps.
Where did we get
Abigail?
It?
In Abigail Wright's apartment in 1995. It was just like either on the floor or on the wall. It's possible. I'm not 100% sure. I haven't gone back and listened. It's possible it's the first thing you found.
Yeah, it was like early.
I don't remember. Early. Very, very early. Or it might have been in like a closet. Maybe Roger found it in a closet.
We were going through her apartment, searching her apartment the first
time. Yeah, something like that.
Man, crazy.
All right. So he's going to start. He's going to follow whoever. Who's leading the way?
Who's got the map? I thought Vicky had the map. No.
Vicky has the map. Yeah, Vicky will walk them. She feels confident leading.
All right, so, and you've got the lantern.
Yes.
Awesome.
So Vicky walks out
of the Arboretum and starts walking back, excuse me, to where the place on the map said. We'll just get to you there at this stretch of wall where this hand-drawn map indicates there should be an opening. What do you do? You stop. Rourke is behind you, shining a headlamp light past all of you. We'll just say he's in the back at the moment. And you see all of your shadows thrown up against the far wall. Vicky with this lantern. And, actually, I'm sorry. I apologize. There is some ambient light in here because you're in the basements of the hotel again. You're back in the basements of the hotel. And he points to this wall. Or you point to this wall.
Yeah, yeah. Vicky just kind of like puts her hand on the wall.
Right here?
Yeah, this is, it should be past this.
Well, the sooner we start work, the sooner we knock off for a drink, right? And he drops down the rope on the ground. He walks over. I don't know who's holding the pickaxe, but yeah, he's holding the sledgehammer.
Bobby's got the pickaxe. He's like he's going to position himself on the opposite side of Rourke so that he swings once and I'll swing right after him. Boom, boom, like one after the other.
Okay, so we see Bobby and Rourke, Mark Rourke, just start. Bobby, give me a strength times five roll.
Oh, God. I don't know if we've got a lot of strength here. Hold on, strength times five. Here we go. Here we go. Strength times five. Ooh, 70 over 45.
70 over 45. Rourke rolled a 5.
He's, not very sure. Oh.
Bam! And he's hitting this wall, and it begins to crack, and some of these bricks begin to crumble a little bit. Give me another strength roll. He's going to roll again as well. Okay. Seems to be making some progress.
Bobby's getting old. Bobby's getting old. Oh, there we go. That's 21 nice. Under 45, so... He just 45. Needed to get warmed up. Yeah, 45.
So weak.
Not a strong man. He's not a strong man.
Just watching.
So rude.
It's like, yeah, anytime anybody wants to tap out or tap me in, okay, it's just...
Yeah. Sledgehammers are very, very, very heavy and very dangerous tools if you're not smart with them. Rourke hits this wall. Boom! And it seems to indent in a little bit more. He's definitely making progress. Boom! As he comes back for another swing, the tool slips out of his hand, and the head of it slams down on the back of his ankle. And he's wearing, like, dress shoes.
Oh.
And he's just like, shit! Shit! And he's, like, bending down, and it goes to dang, 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 dang on the ground. I rolled a 77. Fumble. And so he hurts himself, and is like, that's smart. And the hammer's just sitting on the ground. Bobby, you roll a success. Your pickaxe seems to get through some grout between some bricks, and it sinks like 6 inches into the wall. The point of your pickaxe.
I'm in.
And it's like kind of stuck in there.
Roger steps up, grabs the fallen sledgehammer.
Wow!
Like Jack Nicholson in The Shining.
Dives out of the way at the last minute.
Vicky covers her eyes.
All right, give me strength times five.
Can't see anything.
Yeah, yeah, you're in a basement, darkened basement.
21 under a million.
21 under a million. Bobby's like trying to like wedge this thing out. Roger comes around, boom, hits it with the sledgehammer, and about a foot square of bricks blow into the wall, into a hollow opening behind the wall, freeing Bobby's pickaxe, which loosens, and then you're able to pull it out, and immediately, Roger, you feel a waft of air come blowing in toward you.
We did it.
What kind of air? Warm air, cold air, stale air, hot air,
stale,
wet air?
Stale, warm air.
Does it smell reminiscent?
Actually, I'm sorry. It's cold air. The air is a little, it's a chill wind, comes out through you, like a cave, exactly, as if it had been released from within.
Shine the lantern in there, see what's up.
Yeah. If
Vicky's
if you,
still holding it?
Yeah, Vicky's behind them, and Vicky will be like,
light,
is it Is it open? And she puts
the Vicky, lantern. Give me a search roll. She puts the lantern up to the hole.
This is where something jumps out of the fucking cave.
The little guy from behind the dumpster. Yeah.
Why would you say that? Yeah. Why would you say it's that?
Stop! He just kind of leans into frame.
It's still one of the scariest things I've ever seen in a movie. God,
it is so goddamn scary.
I rolled, and remember we just talked about how I got my search up?
Yeah.
I rolled a 61 over 60.
61 Stupid. Over 60. Brutal. Jesus. You shine the lantern up, and you see that this opens up into some kind of cave,
like for a lack natural of a
better
cave.
Term, maybe. She failed her search roll, so you're not seeing much detail, but you're seeing broken rocks and bricks and stuff on the ground, like... It doesn't look like a natural cavern because it could be partially because of the bricks you knocked in, but there's also like the detritus of bricks in there that seems even older on the ground. Like, have you ever been like under a crawl space of an old house or something like that? And you can just see like the leavings behind of building materials that have been there for so long.
Yeah.
You don't even really know how long they've been there. Broken stones that seem like they were once shaped stones. That kind of thing. Rubble. It's like rubble.
So this could have been like on the floor just inside. Or was this like... But we don't know.
Yeah. Well, you don't know quite yet, but yeah, it could have...
Vicky failed. And she says, I think it's a cave.
All right, so Vicky, you come back. Roger, if you keep going at it, you can knock this wall down enough to walk through.
Yeah, I will. I'll take another swing. Do you want me to roll for it?
No, it's all right. Now you got somebody you can bam, bam, bam. And Rourke's like, oh, holy Christ. Is that it? Is that it? And he stands up and he's kind of like limping. He's got his headlamp. He puts it in as Roger makes this bigger hole. Roger, you see as his light shines through into this area, you see that it highlights maybe only 10 or 15 feet deep past the wall that you cracked in. What looks like a stone archway is like in the cavern built into it. And it looks like made grafted stone as if it's an entrance to some sort of, you know, garden or something or home or something. But it's a stone archway and the path is maybe 10 feet wide. The arch is about 10 feet wide.
Well, you wanted your bottle. Let's go get it.
I can't believe it. That Emmeline was full of shit. Holy shit.
Killer.
Killer.
Yeah, let's go get it. And you can see there's like a little bit of fear in his eyes, a little bit of anxiety, you know, not sure what to do. And he's going to kind of step back as you finish knocking out a hole enough that you could pass through it. But he's going to step back unless you want him to walk in first.
I want him to walk in first.
I want him to walk. Yeah, I want him to walk in first.
He's got the light.
I kind of hold Bobby for a second, like, let him go.
Yeah. But he's going to steal all the bottles.
He steps. He reaches down.
Shoot him.
I think he's just trying to get the deposit. That's my theory. Take all the bottles.
Take them to Michigan.
Take them to 10 cents.
Can't be done.
Glass gold, it is. I say.
Turns to you, Vicky, kind of nervously. Can I have that? The lantern, maybe. And he's got this bright light shining in your face.
Yeah. You have a headlamp on your head.
Oh yeah.
So bright.
Sorry.
Okay.
All right, you take the lantern. I'll just take this. And he picks up the rope that he had dropped down. Just in case, I don't know, might need to do some spelunking. He walks through this doorway, beaten out of the wall, and starts to walk away from you 5 feet, 6 feet, his light washing the walls. And now you can see an archway. And just beyond it, you see a brick-lined corridor. Neil, you're immediately recognizing this from your dreams, the dark brick-lined corridors that you had walked through. You could see it, and he just starts walking ahead.
Vicky's going to follow at about 10, 15 feet behind him. She does not want to lose sight of him in the dark. She has a lantern. She's going to follow him just to see what happens. She wants to be able to see what happens.
Okay. Who else passes through the broken wall?
Yeah, Bobby's going in too.
Is Roger going last or is Roger right behind Vicky? Where's Roger?
Roger's in the back with a shotgun in one hand and a sledgehammer draped over his shoulder and a second shotgun on his back and several other small guns tucked into his pants, a grenade in his left pocket, and an incendiary device down his left sock.
Excellent. I love it. Fully kitted out, as they say.
And Vicky snaps the holster open and draws her gun out at her side as she's following 15 feet behind Rourke.
With a lantern in your other hand.
With a lantern, yes. Right hand gun,
and
left
Neil
hand
gun. And Neil takes out
Bobby's as he passes
pickaxe.
and we see from behind the light from Vicky's lantern, the shadow that Roger casts between, because he's between us and the lantern, as he's walking through, the silhouette of a shotgun in his hands. And up in the distance, wafting along the outer walls, Rourke, as you, this little ad hoc expedition, begins to walk forward into the darkness. Let's take a break. We'll come right back in one minute, or maybe two. Welcome back. We are entering the Whisper Labyrinth with Mark Rourke in the lead with his miner's hat behind him, 10 to 15 feet away, Vicky with a lantern, and it is pitch black in here. Pitch black, seems undisturbed, untouched for some unknown period of time. And behind her, Bobby and Neil, and then in the back, Roger passes under the arch. Roger, you're in darkness here. With your sunglasses on, you can't see anything. You see a slight glow of Vicky's aura out in front of you as you're moving through.
His awareness is so high. He has daredevil-like senses.
I was just going to say that.
I'm not in the dark. You are.
Roger, with your awareness, in only about, we'll say it's 1 minute into walking along this hallway, you start to hear what sounds like maybe a slight voice on the wind, barely perceptible. You feel like you might, I can't even do it justice. It is so faint and so at the edge of your hearing, but it's something like, home. You hear a voice say something, and the word home is sort of like, it's sort of rolled into it as if it was a sentence where you didn't hear any of the other words, couldn't really piece it together, but you heard the word home. And the voice was vaguely familiar. The voice is one that you heard in the house in Boston when Bobby, right before Bobby collapsed, when you looked into a mirror, you heard this voice, this disembodied male-ish voice that sounded very strange. And you start to hear as if it's calling to you or something. And suddenly you're snapped out of it as Rourke, some 20, 25 feet ahead of you, 15 feet ahead of Vicky, says, "Did you hear that? Did you hear that?" And he starts picking up his pace. And he starts like hobbling into a light jog. And he starts like, doo, 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 doo. Rushing starts down the hallway. What do you do,
shoot
Vicky?
Him.
Right, yeah, in Vicky. This moment.
Shoot him.
No, Vicky.
Take out his legs.
Vicky's got her gun out. He starts running.
Vicky keeps as much pace. As he can. Lantern
you
up.
You start running?
Yes.
Okay.
I throw the sledgehammer like a boomerang.
Bobby ducks as he flies.
Incoming. Put a little English on it. It's coming
back. Don't worry. It's coming back.
Neil?
Yeah. You and he's having running? Like a hard time. I think he's having like a hard time like breathing. Because of what happened, like as Francis so aptly demonstrated in that moment.
Absolutely. Right. Hey, you know
like
what,
that,
Neil?
Just like that.
Neil, give me, actually, that's a really good point. Give me an athletics check.
That is a athletics. Yeah, it's a 52 over 33.
52 over 33. Immediately, you, like you said, you're trying to get your breath and you start having trouble keeping up. And you are falling behind Bobby. Roger, you can obviously bolt right past Neil. He's falling back. What do you do?
I will move with purpose, but I'm not going to run. I'm going to move quickly and pull Neil along with me. I don't want to leave Neil behind.
Rourke and Vicky and Bobby are outpacing you as they are all running.
It's okay.
And you start to see the light going, getting harder and harder to see. Vicky, as he begins running, he starts going faster. Right up here! Right up here! He starts going faster, and you start to see at the edges of your vision as you're running with this lantern, you start to see embedded old, old wooden shelving in the brick walls, and you start to see bottles lining the walls one after another, covered in dust, and no two bottles the same. They are all different sizes. They are all different shapes, but they are all labeled with a simple white label. Kind of can't see what's on them as you're rushing, but you are hustling to keep up with Rourke, Roger, and Neil falling behind. Nikki or Vicky, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I mean, like, I almost thought maybe she would slow down to, like, look at the bottles, but you know what? She's very focused on what happens here. Like, the bottles unlock your deepest secrets and your truest self or whatever. And Vicky has been in many AA meetings. I mean, she is a recovered alcoholic who continues to work on herself. And there's a lot of spirituality surrounding that and like the 12-step program thing. And she thinks a lot of it is bullshit. Like, she understands it's about, you know, you have to want it for yourself. And some people, like a higher power, is what makes you want that and achieve that. And she, to her, this bottle stuff sounds very similar to AA stuff. It's like, this is your cure, you know, like this is how you get to the next level.
And where does alcohol come in?
So she is intent. And are you drinking the bottle? Like, and she's also, the alcoholic in her is like, what's in the bottle? So she's very intent on seeing what happens if Rourke were to reach his bottle. So she's following. She's not stopping.
All right, so give me an athletics check.
Okay, she's so strong.
And you too, Bobby. Let's see easy it is to keep up.
Athletics, okay. Oh, okay. Oh.
That's probably a good result.
Ooh, 29 under 60.
Wow, I got an 85 over 30.
Oof, okay. So he's running away. Slowly, you are separating from Roger and Neil. Bobby, you are keeping pace, and Vicky, you start falling behind a little bit. Let's say you just like slam into your toe into an exposed piece of pile of brick, and you trip. You don't actually go prone, but you trip, and like you're trying to hold the lantern up, so you hit and you have your gun in the other hand, so your gun kind of hits the ground, scrabble up and try to keep pace, but he starts getting into the distance and getting further away. You start to lose Bobby too. Roger, you are going to not be able to keep up if you keep taking care of Neil. What are you thinking?
Am I concerned about being lost, or do I feel like I can just keep going forward and I'll be fine?
You're not concerned about being lost. I would guess your character might be concerned about losing sight of Vicky. It would be like the only thing I'd worry about.
I think Bobby too, because Bobby doesn't have a light. He's kind of just running. I don't think he would just leave.
Yeah. So Vicky falls behind you, and you have no light. So do you slow down?
I was just like Vicky.
Okay. But you're starting to lose Rourke now. But you guys are kind of together. So, Troy, go.
I want to throw Neil on my shoulder. That seems degrading to Neil. But I also worry about leaving him behind. I'll just be like, all right, come on, Neil, keep pace. And
break into a light jog.
Okay. So getting up to Vicky and Bobby, and let's say we're all still kind of moving, but Rourke has gotten a pace ahead. He turns a corner.
Shit.
This has just been a straight hallway for like the last 1 minute, 2 minutes. That's all this kind of took. And then there was a seemingly a turn that you did not see. His light winks out and it's okay. Just gone.
Bobby yells out, Rourke, wait up.
Oh, yeah. Vicky yells too.
Hold on. You can see it.
He's like yelling. His voice is echoing down the hall.
Shit. Can you run, Vicky?
Yeah, I twisted my ankle a little bit. I shouldn't have worn heels. I'm always wearing 6-inch heels. Goddamn heels.
They look great. Here, just go and throw around the shoulder.
Puts an arm on Bobby so she can use him as leverage. Like
three-legged racing right now.
You have a gun in one hand and a lantern in the other.
Yeah.
Gun hand. No, lantern hand holding Bobby. Gun is free.
The lantern is smashing into Bobby's face.
Yeah, and I'm holding the pickaxe. Like,
we should just all ride Roger like a Bactrian camel.
Oh, it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Roger, you're right up to Vicky at this point. Do you pass Vicky or do you stick with her?
I'll pass Vicky. I want to keep an eye on Rourke.
Okay, you pass Vicky, but you're losing light and you get up to this, what looks like a four-way intersection. It goes forward. Rourke took a right. There's also a left.
Where's the bottle room?
It looks identical in every... Yeah, look at the map. It looks identical in every direction to you. Bottles lining the walls, dust covered in every direction. What does the map look like? If you go to the map, it was not just drawn to the Whisper Labyrinth, but beyond. It drew a path all the way to J.L. Bottle.
But Rourke took a left.
Do you have that map out?
Took a right.
So he went down the hall. I'm looking at the map on the evidence board.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. He took a right away from the JL bottle, basically. Like that hallway that goes just before.
Shit.
So he's going to a dead end.
Do we know anything about Lince?
No.
I wonder if Lince is the
encyclopedia salesman. I've never done any research on that name.
I wonder
if Lince is the encyclopedia salesman, and that's why Abigail wanted us to get his bottle, because she went to the party with him.
But doesn't it seem like it's one or the other? Like, you go to the party, or you get your bottle? Or is it both?
Go to the party, you don't come back. But Abigail was still able to communicate after she went to the party. Assuming she went with the encyclopedia to the party, right? Then she crossed the sea and all that shit, and then is still communicating... You can still communicate, but, you know, maybe the secret, maybe Lince's secret is a secret to getting her out. I don't know.
Ooh, maybe like this, the letter from Abby's note looks like it's written by one of those machines, right? Like one of those scribe machines.
The robot?
Yeah. People? Maybe that scribe is like, you know, communicator from the night floors, a way to like kind of like send messages to people.
Message in a bottle.
Oh, that's interesting. Where do you see her note?
Just on Abby's note where, you know, she says... On the evidence board, find J.C. Lintz at the Hotel Broad album.
Yeah, it does kind of...
It's kind of got that cursive...
Oh, yeah, it just doesn't... It's not fucked up like the other one.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
Maybe?
Yeah, like that's how they communicate.
Maybe she didn't even write it.
That's how the scribes...
The scribe wrote... our invites to Exeter, to all go all the way to Massachusetts.
Right, but they were being controlled by somebody who's passed over, perhaps. Like, this is their way. I think Francis is onto something. Like, this is their way of communicating once you pass beyond.
Which I hate. I hate the idea of that.
Because that was in Barbas's house, right?
Where we found that?
And that's where that weird... The little hallway or that weird like, to the bookstore. Closet thing.
The library? Bookstore?
So get back to where we are here. I walked into a room here with bottles everywhere, but he kept running?
The bottles are all along the walls. They as have been.
Okay.
As you're going. Mm-hmm. They started within your first minute past the arch. They started along the walls. You're not in a bottle room per se, though it does look like on this map... that the JL bottle does seem to be in some kind of a room. Also, Neil, I'm not sure how much of this you shared with them. I can't remember if you said it on air or not, how much you would have, if you would have shared having this dream where you saw his bottle and it had its own alcove. Now this might be, the map might be showing a room, which is different than an alcove, but the bottle itself was not one of many along a shelf. You would walk past shelves of bottles and then you would see this alcove and it was sitting alone on like a pedestal.
I would have told them before, but I do tell them now, like now that we're in this, where we are. It's just like,
yeah. All right. So stopping at the intersection, you can go straight, which what appears the map tells you is the direction. You can go right to pursue Rourke. And he's you don't even see him anymore because the path is curved and you don't see the light.
I mean, we have a light, right?
Yeah, I have the lantern.
You have the lantern.
Yeah.
I do too. I want to see what happens. I know, but we're here. Like, yeah. It makes sense.
I mean, we can...
I'm behind you at this point, so make a decision, and Vicky will go.
Bobby and... Or no, Roger and Neil are in the front.
They're
right. Yeah.
They got ahead of us now.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they go to Lince's room, I will follow.
Yeah, I'll kind of put it to Roger. I mean, it's kind of your choice in the instant, Roger. You're at the four-way intersection.
I kind of want to stay on Rourke, but also... Yeah, if I have a chance of catching up with Rourke, I want to go.
Okay. So you continue to pursue Rourke. Is everybody following Roger around down that hallway?
Yeah, we got to stick together.
Then I'm going to follow Roger.
Yeah. I got a pickaxe.
I have
like,
the lantern.
And like she's got a rolled ankle and a gun. We should stick together.
Okay. You go and start following Rourke, or at least the path that he went down. You don't see any sign of him, but you did hear his voice just a moment ago, kind of like shouting from down this hallway. And Roger, you start hustling up to keep up the pursuit. So give me an athletics check, mainly trying to see if you can crit here or not.
No, but that's a success with a 30 under 64.
30 under 64. Okay. You continue running after and you hear your awareness picks up at the edge of your hearing, you hear this strange like whimpering for a moment. It's just like and then you hear and this scream echoes down the wall, and as you rolled a successful athletics check and was able to pursue closer, you see in the far distance a wash of light, like wah, 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 around in the hallway, and then it just stops, and light is just shining on one side of a wall up in the distance ahead of
you. Did that scream sound like Rourke?
It did sound like Rourke.
Oh my God.
Brief whimper, a scream. The light you saw for a moment go crazy. I would say this is 100 feet or more up ahead of you, but you see the light just shining on a wall, and you see in the distance tiny little bottles lit by this light, and it shakes for a moment as if it's like the hat is leaning on something, and then it steadies, and the light's just casting up against the wall.
Slowly. Slowly.
Okay, give me a stealth check.
40 under 77.
Okay, you're sneaking up closer. Awareness at the top of all known awareness possible.
Sledgehammer in his left hand. Shotgun.
Hip holstered shotgun, or hip shotgun on the hip, and a sledgehammer. And you start creeping up toward this light. You hear a strange sound, like a I can't even do it. It's like a strange breathing. Almost like an animal, like, but it sounds crackly, for lack of a better term, and you get closer to the light. Can't see beyond it. All you see is this light shining up on the wall. And that sound sort of recedes. And you arrive at the light. You don't see anything, but you see his helmet just sort of sitting there, shining a light up against the wall. And you see...
Is that the light?
Right. That is his light. And right next to it, just past you from the angle you approached at, you just see a black liquid on the ground, just on the other side of the helmet.
Is it a lot of liquid?
Mm-hmm. Decent amount.
Do I see, is there like a bottle?
There's bottles
like,
everywhere.
But is there a bottle that looks like it's been taken off the shelf and opened?
No. If you, tell me if you do anything with the light. I'll say that.
All right. I mean, he'll,
the helmet's just sitting there right now.
Reach down, pick up the helmet because I can't really see, and just start kind of shining it around the area.
You see that this black liquid is just fresh blood. Just red blood on the floor. And as you cast it up along the walls, you see more and more bottles. And now that you're stopped and just shining lights on them, every single one has a name on it. Names you don't recognize, but all seem like, you know, just names. In names
the,
of people.
In the area where the first and last helmet names. Is there an Emrork? Or not. I'm saying his name is Mickey Rourke.
I was looking at my notes. Did we ever get his name?
We got his card, name? Right? Mark Rourke.
I thought you said Matt Rourke.
Mark Rourke.
Mark Rourke.
Mark. I actually remember.
Mark. Mickey. Mickey.
Mickey. Mickey. Mickey.
So I'm looking for an M Rourke.
Yes. Give me a search roll. There are a lot of bottles, and these names are very tiny on them. You guys can all, if you'd like, start to kind of catch up.
We've caught
here.
Up, yeah. We've caught
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I got an 85 over here, so I can't. I'm looking, and I...
You're not seeing Mark Rourke on any bottles.
And
Roger starts to think this is like an Ark of the Covenant type thing. It's like you find your bottle, you look, and it just vaporizes you. It liquefies you.
Well, I mean, Vicky also, I don't know, this whole thing, maybe I mentioned it before when we learned about the bottle is like your soul almost, like you learn about yourself. And it sounds like, mm-hmm. you guys know the Magicians? It's like the library, and yeah. you have your book. Mm-hmm. And it's like writing your life, but it'll fuck you up if you read your book because it's not done. Like
Yeah.
So she feels similarly.
Is that Feist? Is that what you're talking about?
It's the Magicians, the book series and the TV show.
Series, yeah.
I mean,
Raymond Feist, right?
Is it?
Is that the author? I think I know what you're talking about. I think I did read that, yeah.
They have like a whole library thing, and this sounds very similar, but Vicky wonders if it's like not the right time. You're not supposed to get your bottle. Like, like Rourke wouldn't have gotten into the room if he had gone his way.
Right.
But we showed him the way, and now I'm like, maybe he wasn't supposed to get it.
Mm.
I got it. It's Lev Grossman. Okay. That's the Magicians. Feist is Magician Apprentice.
Yes. Lev Grossman. Yeah, I love the Magicians.
There's this weird sort of undercurrent where, like, people have... It goes back, Garibaldi, like his mind was opened up to Carcosa and the king. And so like whether he was used or not to create these portals, he had opened his mind to that. All these other people opened their mind to it and came over to Carcosa or wherever we are. But then there's the go to the party, which sounds great. You never come back. But the other option is you could stay at the hotel. The third option is go find your bottle. But the bottle fucking ends everything ever. So like they all think that they want to go do these things that they don't like really. I don't think they fully understand the implications of these things.
Right.
And I think that they might become insane.
Yeah.
Right. Like the exposure to this is it's the definition of becoming insane, which is what's happening to you.
Knowledge and also the knowledge, like learning.
All right, whatever. I should also clarify something here. As you're shining it around, you see the black pool, the pool is blood. You see the bottles around. As you're looking for his bottle, you do notice that the blood is stretched and dragged, and it seems as if he didn't magically vanish, but as if he's been dragged by something. And you see it pass off
Fuck
into the distance.
This.
Oh, yeah, we should go. Bobby says we should go.
I mean,
should.
Yeah, Vicky stepping closer, like, smells blood and then sees all this blood. And she's just like, where? What happened? Roger, what happened?
Something got Rourke.
Let's go back and find Jesse.
Where's his bottle? Where is his bottle?
I don't know.
Did he take it? Did he drink it?
I was looking. I thought maybe he opened it and that's what caused this.
Can Vicky do a search to see if the bottle is there? She's obsessed. She wants to know.
Well, I guess we should just search and see if there's J.C. Lintz's bottle, right? Like, it could be anywhere.
41 under 60 for Mark Rourke's bottle.
You find Mark Rourke's bottle.
All right. It's still there.
It's right there. Roger just missed it. It's right there, but there's the names are so tiny. There's so many bottles. It's like looking for the title of a book in a library in one shelf. He missed it, but in a moment later, you see it. And
but
it's right there. It's unopened.
Open. It's not missing. Okay, that throws her the whole thing off. She's like, we drank the patsu. She's like, what the fuck is going on?
Maybe someone or something is trying to stop him from finding his body.
Right.
Maybe okay, Roger, you heard almost an animalistic growl or a weird, but it had a crackling nature to it.
Like digital?
That was strange. No, like...
Like a growl,
like an
animal, like
yeah, like crumpled up paper. I think of like when oh man, The Paper, one of my favorite all time movies. That Sydney's mom worked on. There's a scene where he tries to imitate losing a signal on a phone because of the crackling, like going into the tunnel, and he's just crumpling a paper next to the phone. It sounds like almost like interference, kind of, but it didn't have that high pitched whine of actual interference. It sounded like.
Ooh, like the radio.
No, it didn't sound quite that, but it you know, it's similar, but without like it actually sounding like a radio.
I think we should.
What were you going to say, Bobby?
Yeah, Bobby's going to look around at the bottles to see if we can find J.C. Lintz's name. I rolled a 30 under 45.
You don't see any sign of J.C. Lintz's bottle
just
these.
In case.
You're looking about a 10-15 foot stretch of bottles on either side of the wall.
Yeah,
you see a Mark Rourke. You do not see a J.C. Lintz.
Okay.
We have to go back.
I think we need to go forward. I think we should follow this trail of blood.
Does the blood trail lead more for...
Are you kidding me?
Whatever this is doesn't want us. It wants to prevent Rourke from opening his bottle. Maybe it's somebody with an axe to grind against Rourke.
Roger, stop. What about J.C. Lintz's bottle? The whole reason we came down here.
It's not going anywhere.
Neil.
I'm...
Say something. Tell Roger.
Steve Buscemi's bottle.
Give me a search roll.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Is there a pattern to
are we in the R section?
Yeah, Rourke.
There is no discernible pattern to your
to find Steve's bottle.
Logical mind.
I got a 25 under 47.
There you go.
No sign of it here in this stretch.
All right. No, Vicky's right. We just need to go back and get J.C. Lintz's bottle. That's what we came down here for.
Roger, what are we going to do if we find whatever it is? What are we going to do? What do you want me to do? Shoot it? Yell at it?
I've got a pickaxe.
Roger takes a sledgehammer and smashes the area where Rourke's bottle and all these other bottles are.
Okay, give me a sanity roll. Everybody, please give me a sanity roll.
We're all gonna die.
Smash the bottles, you psycho.
Oh, fuck. Jesus. All right, God help us all.
All right, sanity.
I got 24.
Damn it.
57.
27 over 25, yeah.
Okay.
40 under
59
57.
Over 35.
Okay.
Oh,
God.
Oh, my God. I rolled max. So, Bobby and Neil, in this moment, as these bottles are shattered, you feel this overpowering sense that of... I mean, you know that they are soul bottles. And in the moment that these things are broken, you feel the weight of lifetimes like passing through your consciousness in a way that is very, very hard to describe. And it is shredding the person that you are away from you. You are experiencing every moment of a life, every love, every hate, every fight, every, you know, hug, every beautiful moment, every sad moment, like all, every tiny little, every bored moment, every book read, every, you know, all at once in this like cloud of experience that is, it's like, trying, you're like going through a car wash of experience and it's just smashing you in all directions. Oof. Both of you lose 4 points of sanity from the unnatural as your person, as who you are, is shredded away. And in this moment, you can tell me kind of how this loss manifests, though it should include some degree of this impacting your personality in a way that would change your personality. Even if it's slight, like you would take on a trait or something of something that passed through you. You can think about this, but that is what occurs when a soul bottle is shattered in your vicinity, and it changes you. It shreds who you once were. You start to put yourself back together, but you're not put back together the way you once were. The pieces are made from other people's experiences as well. Think about it. Think about it.
Man.
It's a lot to take. But with this successful role, Roger and Vicky just, it's if they don't believe there's any issue with this. It's if they don't believe there's any souls within these bottles, and you're unaffected. Nothing seems to happen to you. You're just broken bottles.
This is amazing just because of what I had just said. Like with Vicky's stuff, she's like, yeah. This is bullshit. This is bullshit meant to keep people here. Wow.
So you're convinced that that is true, that this is bullshit. Roger, you're just angry. What happens after you shatter all these bottles? Now, the debate is, go back the way you came, go around the route that seemed this map seems to tell you to go, or follow the blood trail of seems to be left by Rourke. Something drug him away.
You want to go back and find Lince's bottle? Fine. Then what? We drink it? We do shots out of Lince's bottle? We smash it on the ground? What next? Something just dragged him away. It's a lead. I say we follow it. We don't know anything.
Vicky has seen Roger like this many times, and she knows when to acquiesce, because it will be worse to fight him continually on this. Okay. We'll go.
You only have one source of light. Unless some...
The headlamp.
Sorry. I apologize. Yes, now you have the headlamp. So two sources of light. I don't know if any of you ever had like a flashlight on your character sheet, but just something to keep in mind. If you had a small pen light on you or something, that's something. But two of you have light. Who would take the helmet light? You also, now that you grab it and get a hold of it, you can see that there's a heavy pack on the front of it that is shining this light out, and it's battery powered, like an old school battery is powering it. Who knows how long it'll last. The lantern is literally flickering flame from oil. Who takes the headlamp?
I want to take the headlamp. And I think Neil, the way that
Neil
this
Neil puts on
affected him, this experience, is that it's actually sort of, I think it's sort of an epiphany for him. It's in a roundabout way, he ended up achieving something that he's been trying to for decades. He, by being exposed in an instant to dozens of points of view of coming from the experience of many lived lives all at once, he's sort of has a new appreciation for the beauty of the universe and the briefness of life, and how special that makes the briefness of life makes life. And he's just like, so he's like picking up this light, and he's just like, he's shining this light in his face, and it's just like, to him, it's like looking into a thousand pinpoints of like a thousand stars, like at once. It's just like holding it up. It's like so beautiful. I never knew a jewel so precious. And he puts it on his head and he's just like looking around. Like he's just come out of the womb. It's looking at everything.
Amazing. Amazing. As you have this epiphany, this connection starts to form. You start to realize these dreams that you are having, not as a curse, not as some sort of effect, dark effect of the unnatural, but a gift, something that has been granted to you for your willingness to believe, something that has been granted to you for your acquiescence to the beauty of art and creativity and the performance that
and
is
it's sort of reinforcing
life
kind of what was happening anyway and at different stages of his madness, which is exactly that.
Yeah, it's all fitting together as in this moment you sense that higher power, for lack of a better term, has chosen you to find Lince's bottle for a reason. The reason may be beyond your grasp at the moment, but you know with all of your heart that it is what you were meant to do, and that's why you were given this gift. All these thoughts pass through your head as you put this helmet on and you feel a sense of calm. I'm going to keep your sanity loss where it is because to others, you would seem insane in our world, right? For your perspective, thinking that a flashlight is beautiful. But we see the deepness as to where that's coming from. And that's really cool. All right. You start shining it around and you see what I've already described, the blood trail going away. You guys want to follow this trail. Roger, you want to lead the way here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Roger leads the way. Neil maybe shining a light behind him. Vicky real close, gun out. Vicky, your ankle is fine now. It just you needed to walk it off for a couple minutes, stand on it for a couple minutes, and the blood has flowed. You're good. It's not swelling. And you don't need Bobby. You can walk with a lantern in one hand, a gun in the other. Bobby, what's in your hand? Do you have a pickaxe? Holding a pickaxe or rope?
He kind of let it fall to the ground after the bottles dropped and our bottles got smashed, and he's kind of just on his knees on the ground, just kind of trying to steady himself. In his mind, he just saw all these lives and all these images of lives go through his mind, and he was trying to get a hold over it. And like kind of bend himself back into his own self, but he can't do it. He just keeps hearing voices just screaming out randomly, but he's trying to just use his like training to help mentally stabilize himself, but he's struggling. He's just sitting there just like, and he snaps back and realizes where he is, and he's like, what? Yeah. Okay, let's shut up. Let's go.
Just like seems to snap in the hallway. He yells, shut up, to the shadows. Vicky, what do you do?
Vicky,
he's gripping the pickaxe.
Yeah, and Vicky.
He's looking at you, Vicky, like with anger.
I don't know if I need to roll like human, but I think Vicky is going to try to take an approach with Bobby to try to calm him so he doesn't go into full psychosis while we're down here.
What do you want to roll?
Like human, like
okay, you don't have psychotherapy, right?
No,
you
know, I don't.
Points in that. Oh, okay,
think about that.
No, oh, I do. No. I have a 50, but I'm much better in human. I have a 50 in psychotherapy. I have an 83.
Well, then you need to do psychotherapy. Oh. In fact, with a 50, you don't have to roll. If all you're trying to do is calm him down for the moment, with a 50 in psychotherapy, you don't have to roll.
Yeah, she kind of just holds his hand as he holds the pickaxe. Bobby, it's
now
me.
Roll a human.
It's Vicky.
Human is more about identifying what is happening in a situation or what a person is communicating by their body language or the way that they're acting.
Yeah, so she rolled a 62 under 83, and she's trying to talk to him in a very calm voice, and she goes, "You're with Vicky, Roger, and Neil. And you're safe."
Yeah. I know Bobby? That. I know that, yes. That's me.
Yeah, and she's asking him questions, you know. What's your name?
Your human is telling you that he is exhibiting some split personality sort of issues at the moment. And you don't know if it's generated by the bottles or if this was like an underlying condition that had been developing. But yeah, he seems to have some sort of split personality.
I'm good. We're good.
Oh, boy.
We're good. He starts saying that's amazing.
Interesting. Yeah, so without feeding into like any of his delusions of whatever they are, grandeur or like whatever, she doesn't want to feed into them, but she's acknowledging that perhaps he's talking to somebody else, or he says there's somebody else in the room, and Vicky's like, of course, but you know, it's okay, and we don't have to look at them, and we're gonna keep walking, and I'm gonna keep holding your hand, Bobby. Okay,
yeah, let's go. I'm good.
I know that. I know that. And she's just trying to like put on a brave face because they are in the basement of the night floors, and she doesn't know what she's going to do if Bobby goes insane. Like, Roger's not going to help. Neil, I don't know if Neil would be capable.
Roger will put him down in a second. All right, let's keep it moving. Bobby, yep. You say, we're all right. Bobby even almost seems to cheer up. Neil seems to weirdly cheer up and become very, like, one with the universe, almost very calm, very sedate. I mean, he's usually pretty calm, but Roger starts following the path. The blood continues for some time and then seems to slow to just a few drips here and there, but you're able to keep on that trail because it doesn't split off. There aren't a lot of different hallways, but as you keep walking, you keep seeing bottles. Eventually, you come around a corner or around a slight curve, and you see it opens up into a larger space. As you begin to pass through, as the light begins to shine through, you see this space is massive. It is kind of like an octagon, but where each wall, each side of the octagon might be 50 or 60 feet long. So it's a very, very large space, though you can see from one end to the other, not with the lantern so much as the headlamp. The headlamp in the distance can kind of pick up a far wall. Around these walls are shelves and shelves of bottles. And along each wall are rolling wooden ladders on tracks, almost like a library that could allow you to access bottles. So these bottles are all in all these different places, and it's this kind of hub that opens up in the middle, and you see across from you on the far side of this large open room, another hallway straight across from you that peels off from here. It seems same width, 10 feet wide, but it also seems very hard to see from this distance, 100 or a couple hundred feet away. Yeah, it would be a couple hundred feet away. You can barely see that far end ends, that far hallway ends in like an alcove. It dips into a wall and there's like an alcove in there. Neil, you immediately feel like this is the space that you need to be in. And at that moment, Roger, your alertness picks up the smell of flesh. The smell of a body, and you can hear very, very barely, you can hear this. Up in the distance in the room, just past halfway and a little over to your right as you are looking across, you see just out of the lantern light the shape of some sort of beast that appears to be feeding on Rourke's corpse. It is just
gnawing into it. It doesn't seem distracted at all from it as a little bit of lantern light goes up to catch it in the light. As that lantern light catches it, Roger, you see the detail and you begin to understand the strangeness of the sound that you heard. It is a quadrupedal beast that seems to have the shape of like a tiger. But as the light hits it, you see that all of its limbs, all of its joints, its back, everything about it seems to be made of paper that has writing on it. Like pages and pages ripped and torn and shredded and folded into each other and around each other as if someone out of written pages ripped from a book made a paper tiger instead of like a paper airplane, right? Like it is the shape of a tiger and has this paper build all around it, and it is eating this corpse, and it lies between you and the alcove you need to reach. And I'm going to give you a week to think about how to deal with this situation.
No.
It is distracted for the moment. Can you get past it? Do you want to go a different direction? It's up to you, but holy shit.
Is that why you did this?
Yes, I love it so much.
I just started Googling solutions that are going to put me on a watch list.
Ha 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 ha